Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon Wrestleon. Today we're going to be talking about the first serial of the sixth season of Doctor Who, The Dominators, which consists of five completely existing episodes that aired from August 10th, 1968 to September 7th, 1968.
True facts!
And we want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden, mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's Tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr. Thank you for giving us these DVDs. You're awesome. Follow him on Tumblr. Today with us we have special guest, returning guest, and new guest it sounds like. But Vincent E.L. is here, you guys.
Hi, I'm eating pizza, so sorry about that. I know it's rude to eat on a podcast, but with the way time zones work, this was the only way to make it work.
Did you bring a friend with you? It certainly sounds like you did.
Yeah, I found it out back.
Did you bring a quark on the show?
Yep.
That sounds exactly like a
that
quark.
That is spot on.
Well, it's a quark, so it should sound like a quark.
I hope you're not destroying everything with it.
Destroying what? The show? The podcast? Because I can guarantee you I'm destroying the podcast. I do that every time I'm on, so.
But it's a fun destruction. Anything going on in your life you want to share before we jump in?
I am sort of trying to organize the release of a single, I guess a digital single, which is supposed to be coming out on like iTunes and Spotify and stuff. It's not completely sorted out, but the wheels are in motion and it should be happening soon.
Sweet.
That's exciting. I listen to Spotify at work all the time, so I'm gonna be excited to listen to Vince on Spotify.
Is it one of your rapidy songs?
It is one of my rapidy songs. There is a bit of singity in it as well, but it's primarily a rapidy song. There's a lot of nerdy references in it.
Can you tell us the title or anything like that, or is it all secretive?
The title is Four Eyes.
Four Eyes? F-O-R or F-O-U-R?
F-O-U-R. And there's also a parenthesis that I kind of didn't want to do, but for marketing purposes, because it's a marketing-related project, it's a project that someone's doing for a thing, and it's marketing-related, and they're supposed to be, like, trying to market me as an artist, I guess, is part of the project. Basically, there was a bit of a discussion about what the title should be, so there is a parenthesis, and it's nerd to the core, and I'm not 100% on board with it, but I'm agreeing to put it in parentheses.
Because you just skip over that.
Yeah, because I didn't want to call the song that, because I feel like it's not the title of the song, but parentheses is okay.
Well, I'm excited about that. We will put that up on the website whenever it goes up.
Whenever it's out.
Yeah, hopefully it works out. I'm not 100% convinced that it's actually going to work, but it might.
Fingers crossed.
Let's do this. Let's talk about episode one of
The Dominators.
Saying it like that still, huh?
Yep, Dominators. Episode one, which I have titled The Island of Death.
I have also titled it The Island of Death.
Because it's Doctor Who. That's the most Doctor Who thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a super Doctor Who-y title.
There's no way you could not call this The Island of Death. I'm surprised this isn't called The Island of Death.
I just called it Island of Death, but the is implied.
The is in parentheses.
All right. We open on spaceships, a lot of them.
Flying saucers, flying in formation like birds, except they're like locked to a thing.
They are in a very tight formation.
Because it's all one moving thing.
I think it's the camera moving.
But they land.
Well, one ship, one of the ships.
One ship lands, which there are never any more ships. It's only the one ship in the whole...
Well, they do mention it later, because they need fuel.
They're in, like, orbit or some shit. They're, like, around, but they're not there.
So they just let all the terrible things that happen. They could have called in backup at any time, is what you're telling me.
You know, they probably could have. They probably could have gotten more quarks.
They're just pretty incompetent is all.
I mean, the two Dominators we get do kind of work as a comedy duo, so...
guys, the costuming in this episode is so good.
Really? Good is the word you would use.
Yes! I love it!
It's mixed.
It's weird.
I will say the Dominators, the Dominators...
Describe what they look like.
I call them shouldermen.
They kind of look like human versions of those, like, giant robots in The Fifth Element. That's how I describe them.
You have
them.
To give a description of, like, what they actually look like.
They have massive shoulder pads.
Like, domed?
Like a dome thing that goes way higher than their shoulders do.
It goes up to their temple. And, like, down to their shoulders. They look like armadillos, maybe. And then they have, like, frills?
Yeah, because, like, it's,
on
like,
their
it's
legs
like a
and
big,
their arms?
The shell thing is like a vest.
Yes.
And underneath that, they have, like, black, feathery shirt and pants. I know.
I love them. I love them immediately. Like, the first shot we get of them, I was like, oh, yes. Good. Keep doing weird things. I love it.
This costume is pretty neat.
I'm on board with the shoulderman. I'm also on board with the idea of the other costumes, but not the execution.
That's maybe fair.
So the Dominators have landed on this planet, and they absorb all of the radiation that's in the area.
That's on the island
of death.
And apparently there's a lot of it.
They're just sort of talking about what their plans are. Like, well, we'll try to find some slaves, and if they're not slaves, if they're not good enough, we'll just kill them.
Well, there's one of them really is into the idea of killing, and the other one is really into the idea of enslaving.
That's his whole life's goal.
It's
is
to destroy things.
Yeah, I just want to kill them. I just want to kill people, kill stuff, just blow stuff up.
And whenever he can't, he's just like, I don't understand.
At first I was calling them Slaver Guy and Kill Guy, but their names are Rago and Toba. Rago is the Slaver Guy, Toba is the Kill Guy.
Toba's the one whose mission in life is to destroy everything. And he has, like, the most gleeful... Anytime he gets to, like, explode anything, he is happy with his life. Anytime he's not allowed to explode anything, he is very upset.
That's what it's all about.
That's his character.
It's not even that he just wants to kill people. He literally wants to destroy things, too.
Anything that is an option to destroy. That's what he wants in life.
He has a destructive personality, you guys.
And this gets a bit repetitive throughout the serial.
A bit?
But in a way that I kind of enjoy for its, like, it's
so ridiculous.
Unintentionally, like, funny. There's been repetitive stuff on the show before. I'm like, oh my god, really? But this time, every time, I just laughed at how ridiculous it was. That's
like,
one
he's
thing.
He's so singular-minded.
And it pays off beautifully in the last episode, which we will get to, but...
They're gonna drill. They're preparing some drill sites. We don't know why, and we don't know why for a really long time, you guys.
But we do know what happened to the radiation. We know that they took the radiation, and they're using it as fuel. They state that as soon as they land, pretty much, they're like, we've taken the radiation, and we're using it as fuel.
Which is important, you guys, because it takes everyone else, like, 4 episodes to figure this out.
Yeah, and we know it the whole time.
We still don't know entirely what the plan is, though. Like, how to get more radiation.
And this is, I think, the first mention of the quarks. And this is my first moment of being like, we're gonna get another cute robot. Guys, we're gonna get another... Where's the robot? They don't let me have it.
We see a lot of the robot's POV, but they, not the
they,
robot
they hold off life. Until the very end because they knew what they were doing. They knew that I was sitting there like, yes.
Show me that robot.
Show me the robot. Give it to me.
Give me that robot.
What we do get is a juicer strapped to a Roomba.
I wrote, there's another ship that looks like a manual orange juice press full of bored posh people in apron dresses.
That's the next shot that we get.
Though I kind of enjoyed everyone on the ship. I was like, this seems like it might be a fun group of people to follow around.
We don't get to, you guys. They all die.
All of them but one.
They all get killed except for the guy who looks like Jeffrey Jones, Coley.
Their little ballerina outfits. They're not great.
They're not. They're alien.
Well, there's 2 costumes. There's the man costume and there's the woman costume. And they're both dresses. They're both ugly dresses. These are not well-designed dresses in any era.
The girl dresses could have been really cute, except there's like this black part that's like a tank top, like a cutout tank top. And then there's like this like tulle skirt part, which would be adorable, except the tulle skirt, it goes like up to your chest. It's up too high. And it's not cute. But if it was like, if it was cut differently, the idea of it could be really cute. I would wear it, is what I'm saying. I saw that and was like...
The tank top is also like, it's like really low cut, but there's like a thin strap in the middle that goes up and wraps around their neck. Like it's like a...
I think that's adorable, to be honest. I would wear it. That's the part, that the like the tank top cut is something that I was like, I'd wear that.
Yeah.
And then if like the tulle skirt sat in a way that felt normal, I could rock that dress, is what I'm saying. I could rock the men's weird apron thing, too. Just, I could.
The thing is, it's so thick.
The weird, is it ruffles? Is that what they call those?
Yeah, yeah. Where it's like pulled together. It's like a piece of fabric that's just folded over a bunch of times and then like with a belt around it and that's it.
And there's like a tank top under that as well. Yeah. It's this weird sort of combination of design pieces and it just doesn't quite come together. I don't know anything about fashion, but this just seemed off.
I liked it because it did seem off and that makes me feel like it's very alien.
I will say I think the female costume is a little bit better than the men's costume.
I feel like we need to blatantly say, like, we don't think it's off because it's a dress, you guys.
No, it just looks...
Not anyone here thinks that.
It's just an awkward get-up.
If anything, the weird thing is that there are different dresses for men and for women as opposed to just everyone wearing different dresses or everyone wearing the same dress. It's like there are two distinct types of dresses. That's a bit weird.
Yeah. It is very simplified. Of like, that always gets me in, like, sci-fi stuff where the culture is very simplified because it's easier to write like that.
Yeah, everyone's wearing the same thing except they're wearing two different things because there's this gender divide still. It's like, yeah, everyone's the same except for gender. What?
That's still a thing.
Also, the teacher wears something slightly different, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a variation as far as, like, status, I think. We get introduced to, like, a council of important people later, and they've got, their dresses are a little bit fancier.
But it doesn't look good. It's not because they're wearing dresses. My problem is it looks so thick. It looks like they're wearing, like, it's been, like, cut out of a cake or something. I don't know. It's like, there's depth to it that doesn't work. It looks weird.
It looks like they accidentally put it on. Like, it looks like it's not clothes, quite. Like, it looks like they were in a panic to put something on. Like, oh shit, I'm naked. I've got to find something. Oh, this drape, this thing. I'll ruffle it. Like, it looks very sort of rushed.
Which, if I know anything about Doctor Who, that's probably exactly how that happened. It was like, shit, we need another costume, you guys.
Take the set from last week.
Some, like, designer who probably hasn't slept in, like, a week was like, ah, just here. This, I'm doing my best. Please, let me sleep. We're doing too many of these too fast.
So there's some, like, banter amongst the people on the juicer. I was digging it. I was like, there's some nice character interaction going on here. And I was looking forward to this being the group that we follow, but that doesn't happen. Because we've had a handful of serials where we've had, like, a group full of people that we meet that I just don't care about. They're just, like, personality-less whatevers. But this, there seemed to be a
They're
nice
not even there
balance.
Just to push the plot forward, because they don't do that.
And there's this thing where they're about to go out, and I think Coley's the one who's going, like, maybe we should not rush out, and the others are like, oh, fuck you, and then they all go out, and they all get killed.
Because the juicer crashes into the island of death.
Literally, Coley's like,
no one was piloting the thing? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, and they're like, but there's no radiation. Where did the radiation go?
Yeah, and he does this, like, little wavy stick thing to test the radiation, because it's the future.
They don't think that they're actually on the island of death because they know that the island's supposed to be full of radiation.
Oh, wait. So they thought they were on a different island? I didn't catch that.
He's, like, taking a group of people out to, like, go on adventures because that's, like, weird where he's from. But, like, he's taking them out and they're like, you don't know where we are. If we were on the island of death, it'd be full of radiation. You're either lying or stupid. Let's go explore.
He's running an illegal tourist operation. I mean, they pretty much say that later on. Like, that's what he's doing.
Because apparently hippies don't like tours, because this is very clearly a satire about hippies. I know.
It's bus tours, but the bus is a Volkswagen juicer.
So, yeah, like we said, they go running out, and the Dominators see them from a cliffside. And
they all get dead.
Which, when it happens, they shoot, and then they show the one woman character that's on the juicer. She dies first, I guess. It cuts to a still frame of her, and then they do, like, weird effects to it.
Oh, it's so weird! I did not like it. It's like they drew over it in a way so that it looked like she was melting, or...
Like I said, they took a still frame. Yes. It wasn't moving footage. She just frozen in, like, this thing of fear, and then her face fades out, and it's like wavy fire flames and weird shit, and then she falls down. But for a second there, I know this entire serial exists, but I was like, oh, are we watching a reconstruction? For just, like, half a second, because it was, a freeze frame. It wasn't moving at all. And I was like, that's a really cool effect they did for this reconstruction. Oh, wait, no, this is the actual effect.
Which, that effect, by the way, many people get killed by quarks later. That effect's never used again.
No.
I wonder if it took too much time, it was too expensive, and they were, or just didn't turn out right.
Or they kind of realized, didn't really work that well, we might as well not do it again. People get the point.
So instead, later, they just get very smoky. The TARDIS finally lands, and the Doctor's like, guess what, you guys? We're going someplace, like, they don't even have war here, it's very calm and peaceful, I have a beach ball because I'm adorable, and two just lives to be on beaches, I guess?
He's like, this place is a great vacation spot. I've been here before.
This is the third time now that he's been like, beach party! I love two. Two's adorable.
That's all he wants in life. He doesn't want adventure or science. He just wants to hang out at the beach and, like, adventures keep finding him anyway.
That's like Doctor Who in a nutshell.
It's not true. He loves adventures still. He just also really wants to be at the beach.
And, oh, yeah, when they first come out of the TARDIS, he's like, it's a good thing we're here because, you know, we need a vacation. And I just, like, really exhausted myself playing all those mental images, which is what happened in the last serial, is he played all these mental images for Zoe so she could get an idea of what it'd be like to travel with him. But
it
also, it's also the reruns. That's what it was. He was playing the reruns.
Wait, so they referenced the reruns that they were gonna do?
Yes!
Yeah, because, like, the last serial ended with him showing Zoe, I think, Power of the Daleks or Evil of the Daleks. I get those two mixed up because they have very similar names. He puts this tiara on, and he's like,
here's what it's gonna be like to travel with me, so you can make an informed decision. It's very dangerous.
After that, they showed reruns of that serial.
Like, that's a clever way of leading into planned reruns. Like, I would not have figured out that that's what they were doing. I would just have been like, yeah, I mean, this is kind of like when the 10th Doctor does the mind meld with people. The Shouldermen blow up the Juicer craft, and Team TARDIS finds a war museum that's been blown up, and there are dummies that look like corpses.
They hear the explosion of the Juicer, and they go to check it out, but they find the museum, which is not what exploded. But there's a gun in it, and Jamie's like, peaceful, huh? And he's like, it's a museum!
This is all old.
And of course, because Jamie is a Doctor Who companion, the first thing he does is pick up the gun that's in the museum.
And just,
like,
just kind
every
of waving
single
it around.
Companion that's been in a museum with a gun in it before has done.
Why do all the museums have guns in them?
Also,
why are they
better protected?
Why are they loaded?
I've been to a museum with guns in it. I could not just be like, oh, look, this is neat. I'm going to pick this up and play with it. And it certainly isn't loaded.
Museums and Doctor Who are weird.
So Zoe points out, because Zoe actually has the ability to observe things, points out that this appears to be an atomic test island.
I like that Zoe's kind of smart. It's good that we have a smart companion.
Well, it's good that we have a technology aware. Because Jamie is smart. He is just technology unaware.
He's smart, not wise.
I did say he was smart after saying that he just picked up a loaded gun and was waving it around.
Well, he's not really been trained in gun safety. He doesn't come from a time when guns were a thing everywhere.
He's just technology unaware is what he is.
We do get a cute scene, though, of the Doctor being like, no, Jamie, no, put that down, and, like, fussing over him. That's great. This serial is great for Two and Jamie.
It's great for character moments. We've already mentioned that it gets kind of repetitive.
Because there's a lot of running back and forth.
But it is great for small character moments.
This serial has a lot of comedy in it, too, which I enjoy. Apparently, I had heard that this serial kind of has a reputation for being bad and boring and not good. I enjoyed this serial more than some recent serials we've watched.
It dragged a lot in places, though.
But there's so much going on, just, like, character-wise that I enjoyed that there hasn't been a whole mess of, or just stuff that we've missed out on because it's not, because we can't see it visually.
Because we can't see, yeah.
That's another thing that happens in this episode a lot, is there's a lot of sort of, like, stuff that requires visuals to get the joke.
Like
just sort of
there are very
slapsticky
small moments between characters that are, like, facial expressions. So it's like, how much of that have we missed? How many, like, serials that had a lot of stuff like that, we were like, that was kind of boring and repetitive, because we couldn't see a lot of the good stuff that was happening.
Is this when the hazmat gang shows up?
Some people in protective suits show up, and they all have knobs on their suits. That costume's okay. But yet it's yet another layer on top of this cake dress thing.
Well, they get taken
to like a station.
Yeah, it's like a base of some sort. A science base, maybe? Some kind of outpost? I don't know. But they get decontaminated.
And there's a teacher and his students.
Balin? Is that the name of the teacher?
Sure.
And the student's name is Kando?
Is that the woman or the guy? Okay. Because there's a woman and a guy, right?
Yes.
Maybe there's a third person who dies pretty quickly. I don't remember.
I mean, there's a lot of not killing people in this one. There's a lot of talking about killing people.
I read that this, like, whole serial, like, these characters, the Dulcians, because they're on Dulcis, right? Was sort of supposed to be a parody of hippies and stuff, but I just found them absolutely adorable just because they're so, like, non-confrontational and stuff. I like them. Like, they're just so...
That's because you're kind of a hippie.
I feel like they're straw men in a lot of ways. I feel like they're kind of straw hippies. They're kind of this idea of, like, oh, nonviolence equals inaction. Therefore, these guys just don't do anything. It's that thing that which kind of annoyed me. But, yeah, when they're gonna decontaminate Team TARDIS, the Doctor is offended. He's like, I'm not contaminated. Why?
You got my suit all wet.
Which, of course, he is not contaminated. Because there's no radiation. And no one can figure out why. We know why.
The atomic test was 172 years ago. And Kando, the student, she can't remember her lines.
I was wondering that. I was like, was this scene written and she was supposed to just, like, rattle off a bunch of exposition and she couldn't remember it?
Well, I think it's supposed to be, like, she's homework. Trying to remember her lessons.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was adorable. I thought it was kind of cute. Like I said, I don't know, I kind of enjoyed all of the Dulcian sort of laid-back attitude. I get, you know, why it's probably not great, but I also like, these seem like a group of people to be fun to hang out
Joe
with.
Wants, Joe likes the strawman hippies.
I do. They seem chill, you know? I was kind of hoping, like, there would be a point where they defeated the Dominators just by being, like, annoyingly...
Bureaucratic. Laid-back.
Laid-back and just, like, arguing about politics and stuff, and then the Dominators would just be like, oh my god, I can't deal with this, and just leave. They've bored us to death. I would enjoy that. But that didn't happen.
So there should be radiation, but there isn't. And the Doctor says, I wonder why, as we push in dramatically, even though we already know. Oh, mysterious. Like, we know what happened to the radiation. Why are you doing this push in?
The one Dominator, the slavery guy, is, like, super pissed at Killer Dude for destroying the juicer. They walk by the TARDIS, and he's like, do you want me to destroy this? He's like, no! Why would I? It's just a box! There's no reason to destroy it. That would waste energy. You just want to blow shit up. And we need to save this energy for more important things. This is not a threat. Stop. And that begins a series of this guy being like, can I blow it up now? Or blowing stuff up and the other guy being like, God damn it, man.
What did I just say?
Yeah, but no, stop it.
You should just take his stuff away.
I enjoyed every second of it because it just kept getting more and more ridiculous the amount of times.
He was like a bumbling sidekick in a cartoon. He's that guy who's like, oh, can I hit him? Can I blow him up? Can I destroy it? Can I smash it? Please?
Go wreck it.
Cully, meanwhile, finds one of the protective suit people and gets taken to the teacher and all that stuff, the base.
And he tries to warn them, but they're not having it.
They won't listen to him.
Which is weird because, like, they met the doctor and the doctor's like, yeah, we came here in, like, a spaceship that travels in time. And, like, the one girl's like, all right, I see no reason not to believe that. Like, we just believe facts, and there's no reason why that shouldn't be a fact.
I wrote down the exact conversation because this was fascinating to me. Zoe says, do spacecraft often land on Dulcis? I'm not going to do that. Kando says, as far as I know, you are the first. Jamie says, oh, I say then, you don't seem the least bit surprised. And Kando says, we are taught to accept fact. It being foolish to accept fantasy in the face of reality. You are here, this is fact. That you come from another planet, I accept, because I have no other means of proving it. So it's true because there's no proof? Like, I don't get that. That you came from another planet, I accept, because I have no other means of proving it. Very strange reasoning.
Doesn't make any sense. And then later, when Cully's like, there are robots and aliens and we gotta take care of it, everyone's like, no, there's not.
A little inconsistent there, Dulcians.
There's very little consistency between how these people think.
But the reason why the Dulcians know Cully, though, is because Cully's dad is the leader of the Dulcians.
Apparently he's kind of like the rebellious kid.
Who ran away to do an illegal tour.
Which I felt like he should be a little bit younger to be the rebellious kid.
Yeah, he seemed like he looks like Jeffrey Jones in like the early 90s.
I mean, it never anywhere says that he's a kid. He's just, that's like the role that he's playing.
I mean, the leader is pretty old too, so it's believable that
that's that age gap
dad.
Is believable. He just felt like he ought to be younger.
Yeah, it seemed like a teenager thing, and he does not look like a teenager at all. But I mean, he is from another planet, so maybe teenagers look like that.
Or they're wanting to be like, you know, if they're sort of making fun of hippies and stuff, which would probably have been like younger people. at the time.
I gotcha.
And so they wanted the more, you know, sensible guy to be older.
To be older. That feels right.
That's my theory. The doctor leaves the ship, Doctor and Jamie, to go figure out what's going on, find out stuff, examine things. That's what the doctor does. And they find some tracks that lead them to the Dominator ship. He starts to head into the ship, and Jamie's like, what? You're not thinking what I think you're thinking, are you? And the doctor's like, I don't know. That depends on what it is that you think that I am thinking. And then heads into the ship, and Jamie, like, grabs him because he sees something. And he's, like, trying to pull him out of the ship so he can point out the thing that Jamie just saw. And the doctor's like, no, Jamie, stop it. It's adorable. He turns around and we see
it's
for the first time.
Robots.
It's the robots. And Tony's super excited about
it. It's the robot.
Yes, they say
that's what
destroy.
It says. That's how it sounds. It's so cute. Oh my God.
And that is the most intelligible thing we hear from one of these quarks in the entire serial.
You can barely understand him. I can understand him sometimes. But I don't care.
Because they're
these short little robots with, like, spiky heads with bolts all around them. They're, like, little wobbly walking trash cans with, like, a mace on top.
To me, they look like bird beaks. They made me think of birds. There's, like, one coming out of the top of their head and one on each side, front and back, left and right.
And they talk in that high-pitched little voice. So they are. They're like, can we destroy things? Do you want me to blow some things up? And I love them so much.
And they have these little arm things, like, inside of their chest that kind of pop out.
And when they're, like, they'll be like, recharge! And so to recharge, they, like, wave their arms.
Yeah, they just flap them.
And they can also share energy with each other.
Yeah, they can equalize.
And they hold hands to share!
They were introduced as sort of another, we need to take another stab at doing something as popular as the Daleks.
I don't know why they aren't. Let's bring back quarks.
Apparently they did stick around a lot in the Doctor Who, like, comic strip that was going on.
I always want, like, small, chipper things just, like, trying their best to help, but they're, like, serving somebody who's, like, kind of sketchy.
Are you talking about, like, fucking Minions?
I mean...
It does sound like Minions.
Well, shit,
Minions
maybe
are
I am.
Small.
And they're cute.
Cute, and they help out bad guys. They speak in gibberish, much like these quarks do.
You know what? Maybe that explains why they're so popular. I feel uncomfortable. Let's move on to episode 2.
There was one thing we kind of skimmed over, which was the teacher guy, Balan, I don't know how it's pronounced, but I wrote it down. He seems to be very eager to make decisions without knowing any facts at all. And these are people who are concerned with knowing facts, but not with knowing anything about facts. But Balan is very much into making decisions without knowing any facts. They have a very strange relationship with facts.
Episode 2, A Shocking Test.
No, part 2, Dare to be Stupid.
Oh, that's
nice.
A good one.
Yeah, so Jamie and the Doctor get taken inside the saucer, probably.
I have to say, I love this set. They have, like, their control panel, like, their big view screen or whatever, is just a bunch of, like, swirling GIFs. They're just, like, big, like, Batman kapows and, like hypnotic swirls. Just flashy and ridiculous.
And meaningless. Utterly meaningless.
And there's a big center, like, platform that they go to stand up on just so they can be taller than everybody, even though they already are with their giant shoulders.
Well, they are Dominators.
They literally, like, bring them in and then just walk up to stand up on that platform, even though there's no reason for them to go stand on that platform other than to be taller than them.
It looks cool. It makes them feel good.
And this is when they identify themselves as Dominators. Sounds kinky. And they demand obedience. The robots use a molecular force to bind Jamie and the Doctor's bodies to the wall. Sounds kinky. The Dominators intend to probe them. Sounds kinky. There's a lot of stuff going on with these Dominators. I almost called this episode 50 Shades of something, but I couldn't think of anything, so...
The shot where they get stuck to the wall looks really cool. I mean, it's just a reverse footage shot of them, like...
jumping off of the wall?
Yeah, but I liked it.
And the robots wobble around very unrobotically, and Jamie gets probed. And one Dominator asks the other if they should probe the Doctor, and the other says, no, they would be identical. That's a big assumption.
And also a wrong one. When he's examining Jamie, he puts on this, like, little head visor which they had a similar head visor back in the Ice Warriors.
Yeah, they just got him in bulk. They had one laying around, so.
Or maybe it was the same prop.
I think it had a little extra knobblies on it. But
I'm
other
certain
than that,
it was the same prop.
Well, they probably took the same prop and added some extra knobblies to it and went, oh, look, it's a different prop. And yet again, we established that one Dominator really wants to kill and the other one really wants to enslave.
Yeah, because they're like, he's like, check out kill them? No! Let's test them first.
Let's see if they'll make good slaves, because that's what we're here for.
Which, this is, okay, so they're like, we're gonna do it, we're gonna test them. And, like, it says that, and, like, the doctor's like, I think they're gonna test us. And then when we come back later, he repeats himself, Jamie's like, what are they doing? He's like, I think they're going to test us. Like, it's new information.
There's a lot of dragging things out.
I could see that maybe if it was in the previous episode, and then in this episode, you have to reestablish some things. But this is the same fucking episode. Meanwhile, back at the base, Cully and Zoe are going to go to the capital.
Cully keeps complaining about the stuffy Dulcian council people.
He's very annoyed with them. He's very snarky. But like Zoe, because... Because
Zoe's great. So, and if you don't like Zoe, I'll fight you.
Zoe's great. So Cully and Zoe get in a fully automated rocket thingy.
Man, I want the travel of the future so bad. Pretty much, like, no matter where you go, it's going to take you about 8 minutes. And you don't have to do shit. You don't have to pay attention. You can read a book. I just want capsules, you guys. I just want to be able to travel places. I just want future travel now.
I don't like the fact that you can't see out of it, though. I need a window. What if it messes up? I want to
see
that.
It's probably moving too fast, though.
Don't want to hurt your eyes.
Yeah.
They could at least show cartoons.
Back in the Dominator ship, they're going to do an intelligence test.
And the doctor wonders if it's more important to the Dominators that they're clever or that they're stupid.
I like that. That's pretty interesting. Because, like, do they want us to be smart or they want us to be dumb? What are they looking for? What do I need to play to?
He decides that he's less dangerous if he pretends to be dumb. Yeah. Or he appears to be less dangerous. We both know that he's very dangerous. We all know that.
But Cully and Zoe arrive at the capital. He talks to the council people and his dad. And
it's important to point out how much everyone is just disappointed in Cully.
Can I just point out that one of the council members is a particularly delightful performance?
Which one?
The first one they meet, I think. He's just adorable.
He's the guy that's like, I should keep him away for a little while. But then they storm in anyway. That guy?
Maybe. I don't know. I just noticed his performance was delightful. I wasn't really paying attention to the plot at this point.
Me either. I don't know what happens. Only plot elements I remember from this scene. He's talking to his dad, who's the director, the leader of the Dulcians.
Senex.
He finds out that they knew about his illegal tour thing this entire time, and they just let him do it, just so he could have something to do.
Just so he would stop getting into other kinds of trouble. Like, this is like the least damaging thing you've done, so we just let you have it.
And Director Senex assumes that Cully took Zoe to the island without asking Zoe or Cully. And when Cully says, no, I didn't, she was already there, or I didn't bring her there, he's like, I don't listen, you're just lying to me. It's like, ask her, you dumb fuck. Why are you not even involving Zoe in the conversation? Seems very strange.
Because she's a lady.
Again, these people are they have a strange relationship to facts.
So that they can get the plot going.
What plot? And what going? Zoe explains about the TARDIS. Senex doesn't believe it. He's just like, nope. Yeah, he must not have gone to the same school as Kando, because Kando was like, I'm just gonna believe it. And then Senex is like, I'm just not gonna believe it.
I'm not gonna believe anything. Those are your two options.
Neither of them are interested in investigating. They just come to completely different conclusions, but are not interested in looking into it.
We're not gonna investigate. We're just gonna make up our minds arbitrarily. That's a hard word to say. But so the test, the intelligence test, is putting
shapes and holes, because the doctor is a baby.
There's a box with it. You put your hands in it to do the thing, and the guy's like, hands. So the doctor holds his hands out to the Dominator. He's like, in the thing. He's like, oh, okay. I thought that was funny.
There's a scene too where, like, the doctor's like, okay, it's gonna be better if we pretend to be dumb. Do you think you can manage that, Jamie? And Jamie's like, yeah, it's easy. And the doctor looks at him like, yeah, I know. And Jamie's like, wow, screw you.
That happens multiple times, of Jamie being called stupid and him taking a second to realize he's being called stupid.
And it's cute.
But he puts his hands in his things, and they keep shocking him. He's putting the things in the wrong holes, and keeps getting his hands shocked. And Jamie's not caught on to the idea that they're playing stupid yet. And he's like, no! The round thing goes in the round thing! What are you doing?
He's shouting at him.
The Dominators have a weird plan here as well, because what the Dominator says, you're gonna do the test, and we're gonna shock you at regular intervals until you finish the test.
But he doesn't finish the test.
He doesn't get to finish the test! He just gets shocked, what, once? Maybe twice?
At least twice.
I think two or three, yeah.
And then the Dominator's like, abort the test. He established what the test is gonna be, and then he aborts it. Like, what the fuck? The whole point was he was supposed to do it until he finishes it. If he doesn't finish it, then you haven't completed the test. You haven't found out how stupid he is.
And it happens again when because they're going to do another test where they get on that platform. They're like told to step off. And when they do, they get shocked because the floor is electrified. And they have to figure out how to get off the thing. But they eventually just like, here's how you do it.
It's the same thing again. They don't commit to their fucking plan.
I think though, with the jump test, they get distracted, right? Like something comes up and they're like, all right, we can't.
Yeah, maybe, but still. Just leave them there until they figure it out. But it is adorable. They stand. They have to like jump off together and they hold hands.
They do!
I know they're a bunch of two Jamie shippers and I can see why. They're a married couple. That's what they are. They're like a stereotypical.
They are married in space.
It is a very effective bromance. Balancando and Teal are studying the radiation drop-off.
Yeah, and they're like, it just like went away like right then. They're like, well, I guess it just lasts that many years.
Yeah, it lasts exactly 172 years, then it's over. And it's pointless to spend time researching or searching for reasons to prove facts. In other words, science is a waste of time. No science here. We're just gonna make an assumption and then stick to it.
That sounds scientific. That's our first result. Must be the only one.
Yeah, and we're not interested in why.
It just happens, so that's that. Then Jamie and the doctor are taken into the museum for yet another test, where they're asked to fire the gun, or to tell them about the gun.
Yeah, they're asking how the gun works. And the doctor says, guns kill people. That's his answer. Guns kill people. Someone tell that to the NRA. And the doctor says, we don't understand guns on Dulcas. We haven't used them for hundreds of years.
So they try to give it to Jamie, and Jamie's like, well, I think you put a cork in this end.
The doctor's still trying to pretend to be not very bright, and Jamie's like waving the gun in his face, also trying not to pretend to be very bright, but scaring the crap out of the doctor. He's like, Jamie.
Please don't shoot me in the face. I don't think we've got the regeneration rules completely set yet.
He makes something up about how the guns were made by the clever ones, who live on the go, and tell people what to do, and aren't well liked. It's just arbitrary. He pulls that out of his ass, and the slavery guy Dominator says, these morons aren't worth killing. Kill guy Dominator's disappointed.
He's very upset.
After they almost shoot the doctor in the head, they shoot behind him into the wall, and the doctor pulls this great, face, and his hair's all sticking around. It's nice. He's got a great face for comedy.
And Cully, back at the Capitol, decides that Zoe's clothes aren't ugly enough, so she needs something from a vending machine so she can blend in.
So she gets the vending machine clothes, and Cully's like, see, at least you look like a girl now. And Zoe's like, these seem really impractical. Like, I'm gonna play along, I guess, because like it makes sense. Like, I should be wearing, like, people ask less questions, but like, really impractical. Like, I just don't get it. Which I adored.
She misses her jumpsuit.
Which is very practical.
Yeah, it's called a jumpsuit. You just jump into it and then you jump around. Balin puts the doctor and Jamie in the rocket thing. So now they're going to the Capitol.
And they are probably going to pass Cully and Zoe, which they do.
Kando and Teal aren't satisfied with Balin's assumption that there are no Dominators or robots. And Balin finally gives in and agrees to go check.
Finally. And guess what they find when they check, you guys?
They find a spaceship.
Yeah, the Dominators see them on a monitor. A Dominonitor.
When they find the ship, the teacher's all like, yeah, okay, there's a ship, but I don't see no robots.
And Toba is like, destroy? The guy's like, no, investigate. Kando begs to go into the saucer. She's like, can we please go in?
And the teacher's like, I don't see why not.
I mean, I feel like they would fail the clever test without even trying.
But they are assumed to be the more clever,
because they have different...
They're different from Jamie.
But when Balin sees the Dominators, he's like, but you're not Dulcians. And then it's molecular bond ray time.
And they get examined, much like the Doctor and Jamie. But apparently they have two hearts.
They have two hearts.
They have greater power and greater brain power and two hearts.
Two hearts is such like an established Time Lord thing. I'd love to have a character show up and be like, oh my, which you can't, I guess you probably can't do anymore, really, because Gallifrey's back and all that shit. But it'd be great to have a Time Lord, or like a character show up and they have two hearts and it's like, oh my god, you're a Time Lord. And they're like, no, I'm a Dulcian. That's established canon.
But yeah, again, they just assume that they're the clever ones the doctor talked about, and they don't even do intelligence tests with them.
Because these guys are also all about assuming things and just taking everything at like, oh, this is the easiest possible explanation, therefore it must be true.
So that's the whole point of this serial, is making assumptions makes an ass out of you and umptions.
The Dominators, robots, the quarks, spin around in wobbly circles as they process data. That's what's happening.
It requires them to spin.
I want a quark. Oh my god.
I feel like the reason why they're spinning around in wobbly circles is specifically to appeal to Tony.
I agree. I think that's the only reason why that happens.
I was thinking, like, when I saw that, it's like, Tony's gonna love that.
And guess what? She did.
I loved it so much.
But Cully and Zoe arrive at the station pretty much just as, what's his name, Toba? Is like, well, let's destroy that station with the quarks.
Yeah, he finally gets to shoot something.
He's like, yeah, let's blow some shit up. That's what I signed on for. That's why I'm a Dominator. The quarks start shooting the station and shit starts falling down on top of Cully and Zoe. And that's the end of episode 2. And now we're into episode 3, which I have titled Fight, Submit, or Flee.
I called it, They Found Her Revolting.
Is that a quote from New Who?
It is a quote from New Who, because I remember being very angry. 12 says, your sewers are revolting. And I just sat there.
I think I might have said,
fuck you.
That was the Davros episode, right? Forget the name of it, but yeah.
So Toba wants to completely destroy the building.
So he starts recharging the quarks.
And Rago or whatever his name is like, no, it's wasteful. You've done enough. Enough destroying and kill guys like me.
He has to save space for Drillin. Because he stopped them, Cully and Zoe are okay. They're fine.
Yeah, they managed to get through the door. But they are met by...
Quark. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Jamie...
meet the delightful councilman.
Yeah, and have a big, long, boring talk.
And the only thing that's not boring about it is the councilman's performance. But the actual lines are like, I don't remember a single thing that was said. I didn't write anything down. I have no idea what they talked about in the scene. It's just like, yeah, hey, it's that guy I like.
I don't think it's in this scene, but there's a later scene where they are still talking to the council. The leader is absent-mindedly playing with this like weird table top toy. There's a table, and on the center is there's sort of this weird wobbly top that's just like a centerpiece on this table. And he's just like trying to spin it really badly while they're trying to have like an important conversation with him. And he's just all like, yeah, whatever. Whee!
What was that supposed to be a toy, or was that supposed to be something important?
I think it was supposed to be a toy. I don't think it was supposed to be anything important. What do you think?
I don't know, but I liked it. I know that I wanted one.
It doesn't do anything.
It's not important. It's just there, and they sort of fidget with it. It was just something that like a set designer threw on the table, like, this looks science-y. And then an actor was like, ooh.
But the students and the teacher...
Yeah, Balin and Kando are confused. And the Dominators are discussing their slave potential and decide to test them. They're going to test their physical ability.
Yeah, they're going to clear out the rubble that they've just caused, basically, to make dig sites, basically, for the drill. They're going to clear it up so that they can start drilling.
And Senex tells the Doctor and Jamie that Zoe and Cully just left. And the Doctor takes the time to convince these morons that the Dominators are an issue. And Zoe and Cully are outside with the quarks. And Zoe has an idea.
The laser gun.
I mean, there's somewhere on that thing, there's an inscription that says... property of Chekhov.
I like that, though. They set it up.
Yeah, but they already fired it. But they're gonna fire it again.
It's actually been fired twice now. It was fired once by the Dominator, just talking about how it works. And then it was fired later, next to the Doctor's head. So it's been fired twice now. But yeah, they're going to figure out some way to get that gun and then take out some quarks. And they're trying to figure that all out.
Yeah, and the Dominators send Balin, Kando, and Teal to work. And they meet up with Zoe and Cully. And they're also made to work. And the Doctor and Jamie try to talk to the council.
And they're like, it's better to do nothing than to do the wrong thing. I remember that line. Because they're like, what should we do? And they're like, nothing.
They're trying to talk the council into sending someone to the island to help. But the council just want to sit around and talk.
They don't want to act in haste.
Or at all.
And finally, Senex tries to Skype Balin, but sees only the destroyed base and a quark.
The Doctor and Jamie are gonna go back.
We gotta go back!
They're in their little rocket, and then I believe the Doctor's eating jelly babies. That's what I'm assuming. He's got a little bag of food, and he's eating it. They're just cruising along, and Jamie's like, hey, we're going to that base, right? And he's like, yeah. He's like, there's going to be a Quark waiting there for us. And there's this dramatic zoom on the Doctor like, whoa, what did I think of that? Which happens quite frequently of just like, hey, do you remember there's this obvious thing going to happen? And the Doctor being like, oh shit, you're right. But yeah, they're clearing up the place where they're going to do the drilling.
And Zoe is taking none of her shit and she instantly tries to organize a revolt. It's Vicky 2.0. She's Vickying. And Cully and Teal are on board. They're like, yeah, let's try to do that. And Balin and Kendo are like, no, we should just work. We should just be slaves.
So back on the rocket, the Doctor has taken off the control panel of the rocket.
And he's gonna override the autopilot.
And Jamie's like, does the ship have one of those? And then he does like a wheel gesture because I guess he doesn't know what a steering wheel is. Because why would he?
Yeah, he doesn't need to know what that's called. He's just seen them. It's not like anybody's told him like, hey, this is a steering wheel.
Like, I guess the closest thing he would probably have on a ship. What's the thing on the ship called? The big steering wheel on a ship.
I don't remember.
Because I'm sure he knows what that is, but like,
I don't. It's got a name. What's it called?
I know it's called something.
All I can think of is mast, and that's it.
Same, and that's not it.
Definitely not a mast. And it's not the rudder.
The rudder's the bit that moves when you turn the wheel, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the thing that controls the rudder.
The ship wheel, maybe?
I mean, I can't tell you that you're wrong, so.
But yeah, he's like, does it have one of the... The Doctor's like, what?
He's so concerned, too. His eyebrows are all knit together, and he's like,
The thing.
And the Doctor's like, nope.
But there's some stuff in here that I can fiddle with.
And he like falls down and his leg goes up. It's so slapsticky and glorious. I love it.
He's like inside of this like front panel in the ship and he's like pulling out wires and stuff.
Yeah,
and he's like, hang on, I almost got it. While his like legs flail up in the air.
The Dominators, they explain what the physical test is. And this is the physical test. I'm going to describe the physical test exactly as they describe it. Work them to the point of exhaustion. Note their time of collapse, then bring them to me. It's a good test.
And then the teacher, Balin, he's the first to go.
When he collapses, a Quark yells something not entirely intelligible at him. It's just like... Like, I have no idea what that thing said.
This show has a problem with robots and not being able to understand them.
It's understandable given, you know, back then it was, you know, hard to come up with ways of making vocal effects that sounded like a machine and yet you could hear the words. It's hard to find that balance.
But we cut back to the rocket.
And they're really the first people playing around with it.
But we cut back to the rocket. It's just the Doctor's feet kicking up in the air. Well, Jamie's like, what the hell are you doing? But the Doctor's feet saved the day.
Hey, can you land the thing? Of course I can. I'll get it down in no time at all. Will that be in one piece? Now, just hold on. That's the conversation they have, and I just thought of Launchpad McQuack.
Then, like, immediately the ship just, like, jerks forward, and Jamie's, like, pulling him back up, and he's just rubbing his hand all over the Doctor's face.
There's a point where he's already pulled him back up, and he just slams his hand on his face and pulls it back, just for funsies. Just because he's like, I didn't get to do it enough.
Then we cut back to the council, and this new guy's brought in for, like, another opinion on what to do. And that's when he's like, we have three options. Fight. And everyone's like, what? Fight. No, sir. No. He's like, submit or flee. And they're like, we can't do any of those options. They're all bad options.
The whole thing boils down to, we don't do violence, so we should do nothing. This is stupid. There may well be other options worth exploring. There's a false dichotomy of violence versus inaction, and a false equivocation of action and violence. There are so many fallacies at play here that I'm starting to wonder if these guys are the founders of the Brotherhood of Logicians.
Nice callback.
They have a very, very weak grasp of how logic works.
I think you're just talking about the writers, though.
Well, yeah. Was it this serial or was it the previous serial where the Doctor just had a line that was like, logic just is just...
It was the previous serial.
It was the previous serial.
Logic allows you to be wrong with authority.
Yeah, that's such a dumb line. That's just misunderstanding what logic is. Because it's like, no, logic doesn't allow you to do that. Not being good at logic and thinking you're using logic allows you to do that. But actual logic is going to lead you to the correct answers, or at least take away the wrong answers that you are able to shave away purely by logic. Like, logic allows you to remove things that can't be true. That's what it does.
Whoever's writing these episodes, it's probably just a 60s thing. Who knows?
In the 60s, I think there was a definition of logic. It's just, it's TV writers. It's because this is still happening with The Flash. You have scientists using the word theory to mean hunch or hypothesis, and it's like TV writers are just not paying attention to what they're writing. And that's been a thing, and it's still a thing.
I mean, I'm probably guilty of it as well, because I'll just write shit and be like, I'll figure that out later. But for now, this is what I'm putting down.
I mean, how much of a budget does it take to have, like, a very basic scientific advisor on staff, just to have someone around to ask if, it, you know, is this correct assessment about logic or theories?
More than any television studio is willing to pay. They're not gonna shell out extra money for that. Especially when they can spend it on something like explosions,
but they
which
do,
this serial has a lot of.
They do manage to land.
Very roughly.
Yes. And they sort of just topple out of the capsule.
Yeah, the door opens and they're just like arms and legs akimbo. And he's like, hey, look, no bones broken, huh? This is a success.
And the others are still working. And Zoe is planning the uprising with Cully and Teal.
And one of them, I don't remember, I think it was either Cully or the student that's on their side. It's the student. He's like, there should be a bunker, like a bomb shelter around here somewhere. If we could get to that, we could hide. And he's like, they're like, well, where is it? He's like, ooh. Like, oh, thanks. Jamie and the doctor, you know, they're like going around and they see them. The doctor like pulls out this telescope and like puts it up to his eye. And as soon as he does, Jamie grabs it and like starts looking through. He's like, what do you see, doctor? And the doctor's just like, heavy sigh. I love every single one of these small comedic moments. And I don't, like I said, I don't know how many we're missing out on because they don't exist. Because, like, if that didn't exist, they probably wouldn't, like, translate that into the reconstructions or anything. Like, you know, it's such a visual thing
and
only.
And that scene would seem very unnecessary and odd.
The recon would just be like, they see them in the camp. Or they see them at the base. They look through a telescope. That's all it'd say. It would not, probably would not describe, you know, this small comedic moment that just happened. It's fantastic. It makes me sad that we're probably missing out on some adorable moments. But anyway, on we go.
Is this when Cully lifts a heavy rock with his back and he collapses? Does he pretend to collapse or does he really collapse?
He pretends.
Because, I mean, lifting a heavy rock like that with your back, not a good idea. That's not good for your back. You're supposed to lift with your legs.
Fun fact. I just had to teach Joe this yesterday because he's like, I got chewed out at work for lifting something with my back and I don't understand. He's like, you're supposed to use your legs? I don't know what that means.
I was like, I know you're supposed to bend your knees, but it feels awkward for me to do that. Like, I feel weird.
He was like pirouetting. Or plie, that's what it's called. He had his knees bent outward and that's what he was trying to do every time he had to lift something heavy.
It didn't make sense. Not to live for fun.
Anyway,
I don't know.
I just felt I needed to share that.
I didn't know how to properly bend my knees. I now know. You don't have to, like, split them out there and
don't have to spread your
ballerina.
Legs apart.
Is it your head gets smart, but your brain gets dumb? So much to
do, so much to see. What's wrong with taking the backstreaks? You'll never know if you don't go. He fakes being exhausted, though, to get the quarks to come to him or whatever. It didn't make a whole lot of sense, this plan.
He was trying to get them
away
into position?
He was getting them away from the museum so that he could go into the museum and get the gun, which he does. And I was like, why didn't they leave a quark there? There's two of them. It didn't make a lot of sense, but it worked. So he gets in there, he gets the gun, he's hiding out, and like Zoe
pretends to collapse,
exhaustion to get the quarks to line up,
and gives Cully a clear shot because her head is down at this point.
And then Jamie,
he has now an ongoing thing of trying to do the right thing, but fucking things up.
He like throws his hand on his shoulder like, hey, what's happening? What's up?
He's like, you can't shoot that. Zoe's out there. And he's like, I fucking know. This was her plan.
And now he no longer has a clear shot.
Yeah, he missed his chance.
Jamie's like, well, I said I was sorry. He's like offended that he's still mad about it. It's like, I didn't know. I said I didn't know. What do you want?
So they're led away, and the Dominators notice one person is missing, and that's Cully.
He caught the doctor, and the doctor is now thrown in with the rest of the peoples.
And one of the Dominators returns with the quark to blast the museum. Jamie fires back at a quark, and it spins around before exploding.
And makes this fantastic death
noise. Oh! It's like this high-pitched death gurgle.
Make your quark make a death gurgle.
You want me to kill the quark?
Well, no, just tell it to pretend.
Okay, quark, play dead.
That was it. That was pretty much it.
The other quarks fire back.
Destroying the building. That is the end of
episode
3. Does
this quark explode, though?
Yeah, it explodes.
Is this when Cully gets hit with a piece of debris? Like a big one in the back. The back which he just shot out.
I think he fake shot it out, though, so he's fine.
Yeah, but he was still trying to lift that big rock.
Vince is very concerned.
Was it plaster or what?
I'm pretty sure it was cardboard. We're now into episode 4, which I have called The Drill of the Dominators.
This is where we first, or not for the first time, but it's spelt out.
Yeah.
The quarks have limited energy, and so we can't waste it, which is why we can't go around blowing up everything we want to blow up, because they have limited energy and we have a mission. They got to get the mission done before the quarks run out of energy.
Rago is mad at Toba for not preventing Cully getting crushed or whatever happened.
For destroying in general.
He destroyed, when he got away, he used the quarks to like go after him, and he's like, we don't have energy for that.
But then Toba's like, well, you know what? I think you're being too soft on people.
Yeah, they're both losing patience with each other. The marriage is falling apart here.
And then they basically turn to their child, aka the quark, and go, come to the one you love!
Because Rago's losing his patience with Toba for always wanting to destroy things, and Toba is getting sick of getting bossed around, and they start bossing a quark around.
They're like, destroy! And then the other one's like, don't, because I'm the actual leader. And the quark's like, fighting.
Rago's basically going, arrest this man! And Toba wants the quark to return to the prisoners so they can probably kill them.
The quark goes to arrest him, though, because Toba is not the one in command. Rago is the one who is technically in charge.
Though this does not have much of an effect because he's like, you're the only other dominator here and I need you to do shit.
And Rago threatens to use molecular force, which doesn't seem like that big a deal because we've seen the molecular force and it was just basically sticking people to the wall. And Toba is like, I submit. Just because Rago is like, I'm going to use the molecular force. Toba's like, okay.
Oh, listen, I won't destroy things.
We find out that Jamie and Cully have found the bomb shelter, the bunker, and are in it, but they're buried in it.
And the ventilator shaft might be blocked, because it's getting stuffy in there.
So they're like, we gotta get out of here. They bring Zoe and the doctor to the ship. They start questioning them, and the doctor's not giving anything up, and then they slam Zoe against a wall, and then he's like, alright, there's a crashed capsule. Why was he telling them about the capsule?
He was telling them about the capsule because he wanted them to leave so he could poke around their ship.
Rago wanted to know where Senex is.
I think he's saying that the capsule would take him there.
And Zoe has an idea, but she's interrupted, so we don't know at this point what the idea is. Because she's about to say something, but then stuff happens. And then Toba bosses people and quarks around because it makes him feel important. Because Toba is at the museum place, right? And now he gets to be the boss. Rago wants to go in the hacked rocket with the quark, which is an excellent opportunity for the doctor to hack the rocket to go to the wrong place, but he doesn't do that. Like, he could just mess with the controls again and be like, okay, now, go. And then he would just end up somewhere else, right? Or what did he hack it to be manual control, maybe? I don't know.
Because he's like, I'm going to fly it with these wires.
And Rago orders Toba not to kill anyone while he's away. He's like, okay, I'm going to go away, and while I'm away, don't kill anyone.
So help me if I come back, and even one of these people is dead.
Which they will be.
I will be very disappointed.
Then Zoe
tells the doctor about the bunker.
And they're like, if Jamie Cully are in the bunker, then they're probably fine. Meanwhile, Jamie and Cully,
they're poking at the debris, blocking the opening, and they get through and climb out. And there are quarks, because there are always quarks.
They're like, we should attack them. And Cully's like, with what? Like, we only had the one weapon, and Jamie's like, I don't need any fucking
underneath weapons.
Well, the McCrimmons fought the Redcoats without laser guns, so stuff.
I love Jamie so much. He's like, we'll take him out with rocks. It'll be fine.
And then we get what I feel like is becoming a second doctor staple, but the doctor's not in this, but they're going around checking stuff out, and they're like peeking over like mountain ledges or whatever.
There are these big sort of rocky hills that kind of surround the area, and they, yeah.
They just peek their little heads out, Jamie and Cully. And then, like, Cully pokes his head out, and Jamie, like, grabs the top of his head and pulls him back. Like, you're sticking it too far out there. And then they both peek their heads out. There's
like,
a lot
of
like,
go down from
peeking.
from one hill and pop back up at another hill. It's good times, you guys.
Meanwhile, the doctor's like, if only we had some kind of diversion, then we could do the shit that we need to do. And then Jamie throws a rock at a quark. That is the version that the doctor gets, though they did not cause it. Jamie was doing it separately on his own, but yes. He causes a diversion. He throws a rock at a quark.
A small rock, and then just kind of runs while the quark is firing at him, and
but
he's
he throws
out
like
in
the
a open.
Bunch of rocks, too. And he's like, the quark starts shooting at him. He's like, ah, you missed me, and throws more rocks.
This is happening, and I'm like, Jamie, this is a terrible plan. Jamie, you're out in the open. You're gonna get shot. He doesn't get shot, it's okay. And there's a bigger rock.
Yeah, Cully rolls a giant rock off of a ledge onto the quark as if it was like Wile E. Coyote.
Which, like, you see the rock fall? That quark had ages to get out of the way.
And then, like, that's the perfect diversion. And the doctor and Zoe sneak aboard the ship and are checking shit out.
And they've just been on the ship, right? Just like a moment ago, they were in there and they were out of there and they were in there again.
They had to take the Dominators to the capsule, I guess.
At this point, I was really, like, almost not taking notes because I was, like, there was plot fatigue from all the going back and forth and in and out of the saucer, and I'm like, just get to the point. This is, like, the worst part with regard to that, probably.
So, but this is where the doctor and Zoe are checking out the ship. The doctor teases Zoe for being smart, which that happens sometimes.
Yeah, one's always like, what, do you not want my help then? And the doctor's like, no. It's nice to have somebody who knows stuff.
They're trying to figure out what fuels the saucer. What they're saying is the quarks use ultrasound, so therefore, technobabble, utter nonsense, so therefore, electromagnetic something something. So therefore, the saucer is fueled by a radioactivity storage unit stuff. So that's where the radioactivity went, which we already knew from the first part. Why did we already know this? Why are we wasting time on a mystery we already know the answer to? They already X-Men Origins Wolverined it.
But there is an extra mystery, though, because he's like,
why are they drilling?
Why are they drilling? They've got all this radiation. There's no more radiation.
Yeah, but why did we waste this mystery? Why not just not tell us off the top of the thing why they're taking the radiation? Why not just have the radiation be missing and then be like, what happened? Why are we not in the same position as the guy we're following? Like, why did it take until now for us to be on the same page? This is part 4 out of 5, right? This is the point where we're at the same page with the characters. We should be at the same page with the characters on page 1.
You are not wrong.
The X-Men Origins Wolverined it, but like backwards, sort of. Is Toba angry and confused about something being destroyed? Yes, because it's a quark. Okay, Balin has no idea what happened, because Toba is basically angry at Balin and being like, what happened here? And Balin's like, I don't know what happened here.
Then eventually he gets out of him that it might be Cully.
And then he decides he needs to destroy some things.
Well, he's Toba, so I don't think he ever decides he's going to destroy some things. His default position is, I want to find an excuse to destroy some things.
After he's been explicitly told not to, he's like, I'm going to start killing you guys until one of you tells me what's going on.
Before we get that, we should probably mention that the other Dominator wound up at the Council.
And the Council of Uselessness bicker uselessly. And that's when Rago walks in. They're basically going like, oh, the Dominators are probably not even real. And then one walks in through the door. Basically,
he tossed him for a while, gets really annoyed at how useless they are, and gasses the lot of them. He's like, well, gonna make you guys slaves, probably.
First he kills a dude, and then is like, look what happened to that guy, and then he just kills the rest of them before they even respond.
I think he's even like, you guys aren't even good enough to be slaves, and then like leaves. Toba's like trying to figure out who killed the quark, figures out that it might be Cully and Jamie, and he's like, where are they, questioning them. And then he kills Balin, and he's like, threatens to kill the doctor. He's like, if you don't tell me where Jamie and Cully are.
And the doctor has been going on about the drill holes, and this was when Toba returned with Teal and Kando, and that's no more Balin.
And that's the end of episode 4. We're now into episode 5, which I have called Doctor Dominated.
Kinky.
So he killed Balin, and then immediately the other Dominator shows up and is like, the fuck did I say about killing? God damn it.
But he's a hypocrite because he just got back from killing all the people.
But he didn't use quarks to do it. Toba here did. He's wasting energy.
Yeah, he's really not upset about him killing people.
He's like, you gotta conserve the energy of this thing or we won't be able to get more fuel for the fucking robots, man.
And for the fleet.
And then he finds out that, like, Toba sent quarks out to find Jamie and Cullen. He's like, no, I'm calling them back in. We have to conserve their energy. They can only do the drilling. We have to drill. So then we get Jamie and Cullen are on the run from the quarks, and then the quarks are just like, peace out, and they leave. And they're like, oh, hey, cool. Let's go back to the bunker now.
We've had the first mention of the atomic seed device, I think, as well.
This is episode 5. It's the first time we've heard of this atomic seed device, which is fairly important to the plot and the plan of the Dominators, so we thought we would introduce it in episode 5.
They could have introduced the seed device in the first episode and introduced the fact about what they did with the radiation in part 4. They could have, like, flipped them, those two things, and it would have worked a lot better.
They go back to the bunker where Jamie does his catchphrase, which is, I'm hungry, then proceeds to get food that he doesn't like, which is also a thing.
Yeah, it's a survival kit, and there's a block of some sort of white stuff.
It looks like cheese. It looks like he just took a bite out of a block of, like,
what's the cheese
called? Velveeta.
Well, I mean, it's really hard to tell because it's black and white exactly what it was, but I mean, I guess it was supposed to be some sort of an everything the body needs kind of thing, like a science fiction food. Basically, Soylent Green.
But they have a periscope in their bunker.
Kids out there, a periscope is a tube that bends in two places, and there are mirrors inside, so that when you look in one place, the light is reflected and you can see something that is from a different angle than the place you're looking at. That's what the app Periscope is named after.
Oh, it is, isn't it? I know what a periscope is. I had one. I had, like, a little one that I would use to spy on people when I was a small child. And I also have the app Periscope, and I just always thought of them as two separate things, not having the same name.
No, they have the same name. And a periscope is often found in a submarine or a bomb shelter, underground bunker, basically anything that where you need to see what's happening above or below.
Why did I have a toy periscope?
I don't know, that's weird.
You can make a toy periscope as well by sticking mirrors inside of a tube.
Like, it was plastic proper. And blue, I think?
So they look through and they see the doctor and the quarks and everybody sort of coming.
And Jamie has an idea.
Which is blankets, which is not the first time he has had this idea. He covered a robot in a blanket in the last serial.
He's not going to cover a robot in a blanket. This is a very specific idea and we're going to get to it. Because I have something to say about that idea.
I mean, that still happens. A robot still gets covered in a blanket. But this is when we get, like, the doctor's like, they don't want to take things out of the air. They want to put something in.
It's the seed thing, you guys. Seed thing's a bomb. That's going to blow it all up. And the whole planet.
We'll figure out what that causes later.
Okay, so Jamie has made a rope out of a blanket. Hoth, Luke, AT-AT, he trips a quark and everyone escapes to the bunker. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. But this is a little one, so it just falls a little bit.
But it does fall, and then Cully comes and throws a blanket over it, too, so that it can't see them run off.
I think Jamie, like, sort of leans on it while everyone else gets out.
And then everybody runs to the bunker. Meanwhile, the quark's like,
poor thing.
So I've got something to say about Star Wars.
This is a podcast about Doctor Who.
The tripping of a robot walking is a thing that happened in Star Wars and happened here. This was before Star Wars. Another thing that I've thought about that was before Star Wars is the first Doctor, and that happened before Yoda. Yoda, of course, showed up in the same movie as Hoth. Yoda has certain personality quirks, or I guess little sounds and little noises that he makes when he's just sort of walking around and doing his thing. He's going, and giggling to himself and being sort of pleased with himself. I theorize, or I should say I hypothesize, I suspect that Frank Oz watched William Hartnell, the first Doctor, and then remembered that and used that for Yoda. Because I rewatched the Star Wars trilogy, and I was sort of thinking about when Yoda showed up, I was like, there is so much William Hartnell in this performance. And I feel like he's doing a sort of impression, and it's kind of awesome. I feel like that's something going on. I'm sorry to go off topic there, but I was reminded of it by this
Star Wars Hothness
situation here.
George Lucas just ripped off Doctor Who left and right.
Well, George Lucas ripped off everything he ever watched. I mean, that's the fun of it. That's the point of it. That's what he's going for. I'm not saying that as an insult or as an accusation. It's the point. He's ripping stuff off. That's what it's for.
Like, yeah. What if I put all of my favorite things together into one super thing? That's Star Wars.
So Toebug runs over and sees the fallen over Quark and is like, we should destroy, right? The other guy's like, no, 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 no. Last time I'm saying it. No. He's like, listen, the sooner we get done with the drilling, the sooner we can just kill all of the Dulcians. We're going to blow up this entire planet. They're all going to be dead. Will that make you fucking happy?
And it does. It makes him very happy. He's like, you're right. I've been thinking too small. I forgot. We're going to blow up this whole fucking planet. I just need a little bit of patience.
And then the doctor begins to explain the same thing to, you know, this ragtag crew in the bunker. And then he, like, explains all of it, or explains what's happening. And then everybody's just like, uh-huh? What?
They're making five drill holes, placed like the five on a die that you would, you know, throw when you're playing game. The four corners, they're putting rockets in them. And in the middle one, they're putting the seed device that's going to blow up. And the crust is thin here, so they're going to poke a hole in it with the seed device and the rockets or something. I think they're going to poke a hole with the rockets and then the seed device is going to explode in the holes.
The rockets are going to break the crust and the seed device is going to explode in the magma.
And that's going to make a volcano releasing enough radioactive material to power their fleet.
They're basically going to turn the
process,
entire Earth.
It'll crack open the planet.
It's going to turn the entire Earth into a big radioactive ball. Or not there. Yeah, the planet. Sorry, turn the Dulcis into a big radioactive ball, basically. And then they're going to suck that up and power their quarks and all that shit.
Yes.
Their everything.
And Jamie knows how to steal the seed device. You dig a tunnel and catch it.
Which, Jamie's like, I have an idea, I have a plan. And Zoe and the doctor are like, okay, Jamie, sure you do. And Jamie's like, will you just listen to me? It's a really simple solution. And they're like, mm-hmm, sure, sure. And Jamie finally gets this plan out there, and the doctor's like, oh, hey, yeah, that's a pretty good idea, okay.
That's so stupid, it just might work. He says it's very simple.
It's very simple. It's so simple, just like you, Jamie. Jamie takes a lot of flack in this serial.
Zoe, like, looks through the periscope to figure out where they're digging the hole, and then they're going to dig a hole that leads into that hole. This is when we get the second use
of the sonic screwdriver.
And this time, it's not taking out a screw. It's doing new things.
Burning a hole in the wall, because it can do that.
While he's doing that, there's just, like, this random dialogue of, oh, look at what is that screwdriver doing? Like, people mumbling over it.
But you can't hear because it's, like, has the sound effect of it working. It's like,
if that moment were happening in a movie now, or in let's say, even the 90s, it would be obvious to anyone watching that that moment was designed to make people want that toy. But that toy does not exist.
They do have sonic screwdriver toys, though.
Now.
They probably don't have a second one, but
back then, they probably didn't have the toy of the doctor's sonic screwdriver. That was not an idea. We can sell that toy. I don't think that came up.
They start digging, and the doctor is going to make some weapons for them to take out some quarks and sort of cause a distraction so that they can slow down their digging, because they're like, they're way ahead on the drilling, so they need to catch up.
Zoe and the doctor do some sort of a chemical thing, and they make explosives.
Oh, and it's great because he's like, you just put this pill in this bottle
and then wait 10 seconds, and then you hear Zoe going, eight, seven,
well, the doctor's
six.
The doctor is still talking over her, like, and it's great, and it's wonderful. You just gotta make sure you get rid of it before the 10 seconds are up. And then she's like, 4, 3.
And the doctor's like, all right.
It throws it.
It explodes, and Jamie's like, what the hell's wrong with you? And he's like, it's just a little one. The face, too, and the laugh he makes when it explodes is like a gleeful child, where he's just like, yeah.
I made that. Boom. It's like, but when you use it, you should put more of it in so it makes a bigger explosion.
You know, they take these bombs, they take them up above the bunker, and they're throwing them at the quarks. They're down in the bunker, and, like, it's shaking the whole bunker. And the doctor, every time it does, the doctor's like, yeah.
They're having some fun up there.
When they destroy, when they start destroying quarks, the quark alarm goes off.
Oh my god, this is the payoff that made us laugh so fucking hard. Because, like, yeah, the quarks are exploding, the alarm goes off. Toba's like, search and... Wait, continue drilling.
With all of the self-control he can muster, he stops himself from saying destroy when he really, really wants to.
He just looks so conflicted and upset, and it's fucking hilarious. I loved it so much.
It almost made all the repetitiveness. It felt like a payoff.
They equalize power between the drilling quarks. The two of the quarks, they go face to face and they wave their arms.
They hold hands!
If anyone's played Kirby's Fun Pack, also known in America as Kirby Superstar, there's this thing where you can make a helper so that, like, there's a computerized character. Because Kirby can, like, eat villains and gain their powers, essentially, and then can give birth to a helper who is basically a good version of the bad guy. And when both of them have gotten hurt, and one of them takes food to gain strength or gain health, they can kiss. And then the health goes up on the other one. So both of them get the health. That's kind of what's happening here, except that it's going down to a middle. I was just reminded of that, because it's sort of similar, where it's like, where it's one has less power, so they have to do a thing where it's like, it raises the level.
Then I think Jamie and Cully are like, well, let's just throw bombs at the drill, because we've run out of things to explode.
Yeah, the drill gets exploded, and it tips over, and the quarks are being used to shoot at Jamie and Cully. Cully's leg or arm is in bad shape.
Their energy is so low, though, that they don't have really good aim. But yeah, they like half paralyze Cully. He gets shot in like the arm and the leg. Like his arm and his leg sort of goes paralyzed.
And then he's helped back into the bunker.
Where he finds out the paralyzation is temporary.
Which is good for him.
And then they find out that the Dominators have finished drilling. And they're like, oh shit, we still have a couple feet to go. So they start like digging like mad while the Dominators are going to get the seed device. And they bring it in, and then they drop it in the thing, and then the doctor comes out of the hole, and he's got it in his jacket. And he's like, I got it! It's amazing! Oh wait, I have to deactivate it.
And I
oh,
can't
God.
Open it.
It must be diffused, but it's sealed. Apparently, the sonic screwdriver can't do that. It can take out a screw without touching it. It can open doors. It can make a hole in the wall. It cannot diffuse a atomic seed device because it's sealed. I mean, I'd get it if it were made of wood.
Right.
Well, I mean, they have not set all the rules up yet, so...
He doesn't even mention the sonic screwdriver. Nobody even goes, hey, can you use the sonic screwdriver to do that?
Well, so far it's only had two things, though, which is one, unscrewing a screw, and two, burning a hole in a wall.
But if it can burn a hole in a wall,
yeah,
why can't it burn a hole through the...
Because you could set it off.
Yeah, it could explode. There's a way of getting it off the planet. The doctor sends Zoe and Jamie to the TARDIS, and the Dulcians to the capital.
And then the doctor is running to the ship with the thing. And it is very clearly not him. That is definitely a stunt double. He was not there for any of the film, the location filming. He was only there for like sets and stuff. You can clearly see the guy's face.
They didn't try to hide
it. Not Patrick Troughton.
I did not notice
the shot where he's like running with the seed device and like it's zooming in on him and it's like trucking. That is not him.
I was thinking about something else when he was running with the bomb. He was running with the bomb, and I was thinking of Batman.
There is some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Small shout out. Everybody should watch Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders because it's really fucking good. Anyway, Doctor Who. The Dominators are loading up the quarks and the Doctor sneaks up behind, like the last quark is getting on, and he slowly pushes the seed device in behind the quark, and then the door's shut and he's like running to get out of the secondary door, I guess, and he barely gets out, and then the ship takes off. But there's rockets that are going down in the other holes, right? That's going to set off the magma, but they need the seed device to cause the radiation.
So there's just going to be like a small volcanic eruption.
Yeah, just localized to the Island of Death. The ship takes off, and the Dominators get in one last, you know, ha ha ha, we're evil, and then the ship explodes.
Wait, the Doctor has already joined Jamie and Zoe, right? Before the explosion, because they're watching it explode.
Yeah, yes. They watch it explode, and it looks like the Doctor, like, bumps into Jamie and, like, throws Zoe to the ground. But they're watching it, and they're like, this is great, this is awesome. And then Jamie's like, didn't you say something about a volcano? And he's like, yeah, but it'll be just localized to the island. And he's like, Doctor, we're all on the island. He's like, oh my word!
That's his line. Oh my word!
I wrote, the saucer explodes in the sky, the volcanic eruption... oh my word.
It's fantastic. That's the third time the Doctor's been like, oh right, shit! I'm missing out on obvious things here. So I assume they get in the TARDIS and leave. And then the credits roll and we see magma going everywhere. And that's it. That's the end of the Dominators.
Final thoughts.
Well, I feel like, and I'm going to be repetitive when I say this, this was a bit repetitive. Other than that, there were some fun bits. The sort of dynamic between the bad guys. I couldn't tell if it was meant as a joke or if it was just so over the top that it became camp. I'm not sure which, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Rago and Toba dynamic. In a way, I sort of enjoyed the illogical people. And in a way, I was frustrated by it because it was like, hey, you don't know. You don't know what you're talking about. And I feel like the people writing don't know what they're talking about. And I feel like nobody knows what they're talking about. And I get that it's the 60s, but I mean, there were philosophers before that. There were logicians before that. I don't feel like it's a good excuse to grasp the basic concept of logic and the basic idea of a false dichotomy and a false equivocation fallacy and all these very basic things. I feel like there were a lot of overlookings happening here, but it was sort of fun, just a bit slow and repetitive.
Okay, so first I want to say, while we were watching this, we were halfway through, frequent guest Chris Cherry texted us and said, I've heard mixed things about this episode. Should I skip it? And I was like, what? No. First of all, it's an existing 2-episode, which is a gift. Okay? Even the most, like, mundane, repetitive, occasionally poorly written 2-episode, if it exists, you watch it.
Yeah, and it's only 5 parts.
It's not, you know, like a 6-parter or 12-parter or something like that. I see all the complaints. They're valid. It gets very repetitive. Although, I think this is, like, the first one I remember watching in a long time going, hey, I like a lot of the character stuff, and not just Jamie and the Doctor and Zoe, who are an amazing TARDIS team. They're probably my favorite since we lost, like, Steven.
Yeah, Steven and Vicky were good, and I feel like Jamie and Zoe are a good combo, at least so far. I mean, I'm waiting for something bad to happen, and suddenly one of these characters is turned into just something insufferable, but right now, I feel like Zoe is, you know, the new Vicky, but still with her own kind of identity, sort of.
The most, I mean, and I know this, it's, we've only really had them for, like, 2 serials, really. And this is really the first one is, you know, is there like a Team TARDIS. I love Zoe instantly, though.
She has not fallen into the trope of being a damsel in distress, screaming at everything.
Well, no, yet. And she's got some sort of consistency right now.
She's actually doing stuff and coming up with ideas and organizing things and being an active character, not just someone who almost does stuff.
And having her as somebody who knows a lot as a balance to Jamie, who knows nothing, is like really help. And you never feel, I mean, they did get on to Jamie, they did tease Jamie a lot, but they tease Zoe a lot for knowing things. They're both just good people. They're both just good, fun companions. And they're not pitted against each other. Not in like a mean way or a gross way ever.
There's some bickering, but it's always like joking around.
Banter.
Sort of. Yeah, it's banter. It's not.
I get complaints about it, but it was one of the more fun ones we've watched in a while. I will concede that it's not necessarily because it's like a great serial. And a lot of that is because, hey, it exists. We get to see one of the things that's really great about this era is there's a lot of facial reactions and there's a lot of visual comedy. And that sucks like 90% of the time because you miss it all. So watch The Dominators, you guys. Watch it. It's good. Even the parts of it that aren't good are worth watching.
And it was probably slower for me because I was taking notes and stopping and rewatching scenes just to sort of pay attention. If I just breezed through this, if I just watched this on the train like I normally do when I'm not on the show, I would probably have liked this a lot more than I did.
Yeah, I like put it on maybe when, like, you know, you're also fixing dinner or something, you know? But watch it. It's 100% worth watching, just like for the quirks alone. There are cute robots in this episode. Are you kidding me?
Bridget, watch the sailor boat. Come on, Bridget.
They're so cute. I love them.
I've enjoyed this serial more than a handful of serials we've watched recently just because it's so much fun. It's definitely not breaking any new ground or anything, but I never felt like it was too boring or anything. It definitely dragged in some places, but not as bad as some things. Like the Will in Space was probably one of the worst ones in the 2 run. And that was just like the last serial. And this one's, I feel like, way better. Just pacing wise, the character stuff is great. There's characters I care about. I love the dynamic of the Dominators, even if it was intentional or not. I just love the whole, wanna wreck it? No! Wanna wreck it? No! Wanna, don't wreck it? I love that. I love the quirks. They're adorable and silly. They're not frightening at all, but I love them.
What are you talking about, Rashad?
Aww. Look at your cute little voice.
You're just the cutest.
I'm going to pinch your little cheeks. Spikes. They don't got cheeks. They got spikes.
And I know, like, a lot of people love 2 and Jamie. This cereal is for you. There are so many 2 Jamie moments of just them being adorable that I don't know how you could skip it. It's just so good. And don't skip this. I've heard this is bad. I don't feel like it's bad. I feel like maybe it's...
It's dumb, but it's enjoyable. That's a lot of the Russell T. Davis run as well. It's dumb, but enjoyable. So, like, I feel like people who like the Russell T. Davis run, which is a perfectly valid position. I like the Russell T. Davis run, but I fully acknowledge that a lot of it is kind of dumb, but enjoyable.
But, like, sometimes that's what you want.
I will say, at least it's not boring. Like, the Will in Space was boring. There was not much going on. Like, I would say this is even better than, like, Tomb of the Cybermen, which is another one that exists, but...
Oh, yeah, this was more...
Was I on for that?
Yeah, you were on that one. I would put it in the tops just because of how fun it is.
I think what we've learned from this is if you give me a tiny robot and, like, a few character moments, that's it. I'm sold.
That's all.
It doesn't matter what else you do in the rest of it. I'm like, this was great. It's one of my favorites.
But, that was it. That's the Dominators. Well, how would you do this if this were Modern Who?
I would bring back, not necessarily the Dominators, but I would bring back the Quarks. Have, like, one Quark be, like, abandoned somewhere.
Oh, no.
The Doctor just finds an abandoned Quark just sitting there almost running out of energy, and it's just sort of sitting there singing to itself, and the Doctor has to sort of power it back up, and the weapons are broken so that it becomes the Doctor's pet. It just becomes the new canine. That's how you bring back the Quark. Just bring back the Dulcians and have them be confused for Time Lords. Or you do some sort of a backstory thing where it turns out that the Time Lords were Dulcians at one point, and they sort of broke off and became their own society. Like, they come from the same place originally. That's another possible way of doing that, where it's like biologically they are the same, or biologically they are very close. So that's how you would do that. And here's how you bring back Space Jam. Okay.
Vince, anything you want to, you know, pimp out or anything?
I guess people can follow me on Twitter at VincentEL. When I tweet, it's usually just random thoughts. But I do occasionally tweet when I've posted a song somewhere, or when I've done something or been in something or been on a podcast. But most of the stuff I tweet is just like a random thought I had. Or if I'm watching a movie by myself, I might live tweet it. Like recently, I watched Jurassic World and I tweeted about how dumb it was. That's the thing people can do. People can go to Facebook as well and find my band page, or my artist page, I guess, which is Vincent E.L., the Earwig Linguist. I think you can click a thing to go like, I want this to actually show up in my newsfeed. I think you can do that. That would be nice if people do that. Go to my Bandcamp page, which is Vincent E.L., and there's my SoundCloud page, which is Vincent E.L. There's also soundcloud.com/ill_Eden. Ill, like you're not feeling well, and Eden, like the paradise that never existed. Music that happens there is music by me and a friend of mine, whose name is Cordless, who is American, and I am not, I'm Swedish. I have a YouTube page, it's Swinglish. Very little happens there these days because I never have time to edit stuff, but I've got some stuff that might be showing up there, maybe. Or you can just go to swinglish.neu, and there are some links there to all of these places, probably. You can also go back in the archives of this show and hear me on other episodes that I've been on.
There's a convenient playlist on YouTube.
Right. You can hear me be very repetitive and probably quite dull, and occasionally bring robots along.
Anything you want to plug, robot?
I would like to plug the Dominators from Syria, probably from the 60s, probably in Syria's Dominators part 2 here. We also like to plug murder effects such as Girls and Pitch Shift. And as I speak in the first ago, I would also like to plug the Dominators. They give me power, probably by stealing it from comic post sites. Thanks.
I'd like to thank you for plugging and talking in a falsetto voice. I don't think that's ever been plugged in the history of plugs. If you like the episode, check out more on WatchYourAssLon.com and be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. If you'd like to help us out even more, go to WatchYourAssLon.com/support, and there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which is Patreon.com/Watchathon. There you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like videos of us watching the episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, get to see all the stuff we cut out of Vince, and day early episodes. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. I will mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of special
like
thanks again
to, do right now.
To Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode. You can go to his Tumblr at mgoldentumbles@tumblr.com. That's Tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr. Tune in next time when we talk about The Mind Robber with special guest Ben Padden. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Keep calm in Rassilon.
And have a tasteful tuna.
Bye.
We love you.
Shall we, this guy?